from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington, you're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Andy Schneider is the Senior Vice President of People at Alaska Airlines, where she oversees nearly 21,000 employees. Andy was in leadership roles at Alaska during 9/11, COVID, and the merger with Virgin America. She was also a student at GU when the Kennel Club was founded. She shares stories from her journey through various roles and what fosters success.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. And, you know, I have a pretty simple formula, Andy, and what a great name, by the way. I want to hear your journey. I want to hear your story. Are you from Boise originally?
I am. I'm a Boise born and raised.
Okay. Are you a Bishop Kelly grad or
Timberline? I just might be.
Yes. BK. All right. Awesome. Kelly. So take me from there. How did Gonzaga, how did it end up on your radar? And then your journey here and kind of what your experience was like.
Yeah, no, I did. I went to Bishop Kelly. My father moved us to Pocatello, Idaho, my senior year of high school. But my mom and dad had always said, hey, when you know, if you want to go to school, there's good schools in state. If you want to go to a public school, then you should stay in state. If you're going to go to a private school, you're going to a Catholic one. And so it does help narrow your search a little bit. So yeah. I looked at a number of schools. I looked at Portland. I looked at Seattle U, looked at Gonzaga. In fact, my Bishop Kelly girlfriends and I made a road trip from Boise to see all of those over spring break. And ended up really, really loving the Gonzaga campus. It was super, just kind of spoke to me. And so that's where I ended up. It was awesome. Good. And then my mom also and dad also said, hey, when you're done, you know, you can major in whatever you want, but know that once you get through with that, we'll get you through college, but then you're sort of on your own. So just whatever you do, get a degree that will allow you to land a job.
That is precious advice, I would say. Precious yes. advice. My wife would be an example where, you know, the message was just go study what you find interesting, which is, so she studied linguistics and it was fascinating, but you graduate and it's all of a sudden it's like, ugh. So if you can combo it with something cool or something value, I mean, there's a lot of ways to, and she's fine now, obviously, but.
Well, it's funny because my girlfriend, I said, you know, I don't know. I know I need to get a job when I'm done. And she said, I think you should major in accounting and it's great for all these reasons. And they come and they interview you. You can get a job while you're still in school. It's going to be great. And so I just sort of followed a little bit along with that. And you talked about your wife, my son used to tell me that business degrees shouldn't, they're not real degrees. Nobody should really be able to get one. You just need to go to college to learn how to think. Yeah. And we've had a lot of good debates in our family about how well that works.
Someone told me once that the joke outside of or across campus is don't walk by Jepson too slowly. You might catch a degree. So I'll let that, we'll leave that as it is. But jobs are nice. I mean, for me, from my perspective, the big advantage of getting a business degree here is our students have this tremendous background they get in the core, you know, how to think, how to articulate, how to communicate. And that's the message I always get back from employers, like Zags are different because of that.
I think that's absolutely true. So. I think too, like, I don't know that we talk enough about it when people are in college, but I do think you need to be looking or you want students to be looking for places to work where there's a good value alignment between themselves and the organization. And I think that Gonzaga students are more discerning about that. I think they have a stronger sense of what drives them and what's really important. And they will, you know, if they're smart, they're looking they're looking for organizations that sort of align with how they think and what's important and how they treat people, frankly.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Agree 100%. So, okay. So you're on campus. Now what dorm were you in?
Cremont.
Okay. So yes, not where
I was devastated.
At.
I wanted to be in CM. Of course I prepped CM. In those days, I don't think they had any sophisticated algorithms that helped determine where you went. So I ended up in Cremont, way off campus. It was mixed grades and ended up being a really, really fun place. But it wasn't my first choice, let's just say.
Gotcha. Well, knowing what I know on how the sausage is made from the inside, they probably still don't have a sophisticated algorithm. But I digress. Yeah. Okay. So Cremont. So that's good though. I mean, smaller, tight-knit group of people, I imagine. And you work your way to the business school and eventually accounting of all things.
Yes. So I did major in accounting. I will tell you, I might be the most unlikely student to finish an accounting degree and pass the CPA, but I did make my way through it. It was a super rigorous, good program. I liked it because it wasn't easy for me. I had to work at it, but I felt like I was really learning something good and useful. So it's been great.
Yeah, no, it's challenging, as you say. It's a different way of thinking, and it's for 99% of college students, they've never had exposure to it all, to any of it. So it's just it's radically different. And then I got financial accounting, and I got to go do tax, and that's just a totally different beast. And then cost accounting, it's its own beast as well. So, for some reason, a lot of people that want a challenge, that want to better themselves, gravitate towards it. So the reason I point that out is because you're not doing any accounting today. Maybe you're leveraging some of the skill sets, but I would imagine you're not looking at a lot of journal entries. So
don't look at too many journal entries. No, I can definitely say that's the case. Yeah, obviously the skills you learn in accounting stay with you forever. The ability to read financials and understand how the money flows is so important to any job, frankly, that you're going to have. But I've definitely moved on from debits and credits. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the chart of accounts or anything like that. So, and that's good. As far as I'm concerned, that's just fine.
That's it. I'm in the same boat. So I'm with you on that. So, but okay. So you go through GU. This is pre-basketball glory.
Oh, John Stockton was there.
Oh, okay. Go on.
He was there. Yeah. John Stockton was there and Data. So that was sort of the beginning of that. Kennel Club started when I was there.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. I was the RA at Dooley and the RD at Madonna for a period of time. But then I graduated and went on to public accounting.
Okay. Okay. In Seattle.
In Seattle. Yep. I moved to Seattle. I worked for Anderson, not to date me even worse than I might already be, but it was the Big Eight in those days.
Yeah.
And I worked for Anderson for almost 2 years.
Okay. Anderson for 2 years. And then how do you find your way into your current profession, HR?
Oh my gosh. So I'll give you a little, it's a long and twisted story, but I got a call when I was at Anderson. They said, hey, they're looking for a manager of financial accounting at Alaska Airlines. I think you might be good. You should go take a look at it. So I thought, what the heck? I went and interviewed for the job and they said, hey, we really need somebody with 5 years experience. You don't really have enough. And I said, that's fine. I'm not really looking to change right now anyway. 4 months later, they called and said, yeah, well, we can't find anybody else. So would you come and talk to us again? So I did. I got hired on as the manager of financial accounting. I did that for a few years. I had another job in accounting. I was the director of revenue accounting. The revenue accounting at an airline is the people that, in those days, I don't know if you remember this, but when you went on to you boarded an airplane, you handed them a paper ticket. So it was really sort of a production shop. We would get all of the auditor coupons, which is like they reported the sale and you'd create a big liability for all of the auditor coupons that came in from travel agents and from, you know, reservations. And then as you handed those coupons to the people at the door, all those coupons would come back to my team and we would, they'd all go through a scanning machine or they'd have to key punch them into the system in order to determine how much revenue to recognize on a monthly basis.
Wow.
So I did that for 3 years. And then there was sort of a big shakeup. My boss went over to run Horizon Air, a regional subsidiary. Another person was promoted and they sort of said, hey, you know, you got to decide, do you think you really want to stick with this accounting thing for a long time? Or, you know, you're good with people, you understand systems. Maybe you should go talk to somebody about what life is like in the operations. And as you know, from an airline, operations is sort of where everything happens. And I went over and talked to a guy who at the time was in charge of, he was in charge of all the airport work. He was in charge of the flight attendants and all the real estate. And he said, hey, we have the head of the in-flight job, which is flight attendants, is open. And would you be interested in talking about that? And I was young, I was single, and I said, I don't really know anything about in-flight, but let's talk about it. And I remember coming home one day and saying to my boyfriend at the time, you know, I might actually get this job. I don't know what I'm even doing, but I think they're interested in me for this role. And next thing I knew, I was the assistant vice president of in-flight, which was the flight attendants at the time. And that was a big change. I always tell people, like, accounting is sort of black and white. Our offices were quiet because people had their heads down and they were working. And then I went to the world of in-flight, which was 24/7, and it was Technicolor. The stories were crazy. The people were fun. The days were never the same days twice. The incidences that would happen and the crazy stuff that I sort of faced was my eyes walked around with gigantic eyes for the first year and a half, just sort of taking in everything that happened in the world, where, you know, flight attendants who interact with the public and interact with pilots and all the story, the crazy things that happen on layovers and on airplanes. I mean, it's like, you can't make this stuff up, but it was fun.
Wow. So if I understand, so you're basically the head of all the stewards.
We call them flight attendants.
That's what flight attendants. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Flight attendants. And so what kind of number are we talking about? Are there like,
well, in those days, it was probably about 1500. So we're 1500. We have 7,000 today, but there was probably about 1500 in those days. So I went for it. So that was like a very, very big pivot from accounting into the world of operations. And so you had asked kind of how I got to here, and I'll kind of speed up the story because I don't want to bore anybody. But I had responsibility for the flight attendants, and then I was given responsibility for airport operations, which are all of the station locations, everything that happens in the airport. So I had flight attendants and airports. I did that for a while. I ended up with aviation security too, which, you know, before 9/11, we used to manage all of the checkpoints, the security checkpoints at all the airports. And then TSA came along.
When you check in, that's the security.
No, like, you know, you still had to go through a checkpoint, but you had to go through, you know, you still went through metal detectors, but all the people that worked those were either contractors or employees of the airlines.
Okay.
So I had that for a while. And then I decided, or I was asked to go run some things over at our regional carrier. So I was the senior vice president of customer services, which was similar to the work I did at Alaska. I had flight attendants and airports. I had food and beverage, labor relations, some HR stuff. I had a lot of different things over there. So I did that for a while. Then I came back to Alaska to run in-flight again. And at this time, it was probably about, you know, between 5,000 and 6,000 flight attendants. Then I came back to help negotiate the labor agreement and run that group. And then there was a need in HR, and they said, hey, would you be interested? Your whole career, most of your career has been about leading people. What do you think about leading HR? And so that's how I ended up here.
Wow. And one of my son's good buddies at school, his dad's an Alaska pilot.
Awesome.
I said, hey, I'm talking to Andy Snyder today. And he's like, well, I know the name. I get emails from her, but I don't think I've met her before. So, so some fascinating things here. So, I mean, that's a major pivot. I just can't imagine the skill set change. And you're talking about basically drinking from a fire hose in Technicolor to get that. A couple things jumped out at me. 9/11, how did that, and when that happened, obviously, like, things are crazy. What were some of the, describe that experience.
Yeah. So we had been through a few things, you know. Airlines are either notorious for having things happen to them that impact them in a major way, like 9/11 or even COVID. Or things happened internally. So we had been through our accident, and we had lost an airplane. I think you might know about this, down in California. 261 was the flight number, and there was 88 people on board that flight that all perished. And so that was a very, very dramatic incident, and it really changed the culture and the complexity of our company, and brought in this whole new bow wave of, let's focus on safety. Let's make sure we're shining a light and we're fully transparent about where the problems are so that we can work to fix things. And that was a major shift. So we went through that, sort of coming out of that, feeling good, everything's going well. And then 9/11 happened. And that was a dramatic day for the country, obviously. I think everybody has a recollection of what they were doing when they got the word about that. And right after that, it was crazy because, you know, there weren't any planes in the sky. We had people stranded all over the country, you know, flight attendants, pilots, people that were just out of position. We were trying to find ways to get everybody home as fast as we could because it was just such an uncertain time. And then that was sort of the birth of the TSA. But before the TSA was sort of stood up and really took over the checkpoints for the airlines, we did a ton of work around making sure we could identify what the threats were. And you might remember this, that, you know, that there were searches before everybody got on the plane, searches of the airplane, searches of all the people, searches of all the bags. It really sort of gummed up the system for quite a while. We had to go through people's bags, right? You know, some of it was random, some of it was required. There's just a lot of things that were sort of happening at that period of time that made life challenging for our employees and for everybody else. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a heavy lift for the airlines. And is there some level at the time of communication with other airlines about, I don't know, techniques, methods, what to look for, what you're seeing?
Yeah, so there was a lot of information that came out from the government about what was required. And so we would have industry-wide calls that they would lead to sort of say, hey, there's a security directive that's coming out. We need all of you to comply with it in the next 24 hours. Here's what it is. Here's what it means. Here's how we want you to comply. So we would get with all the carriers, and then we would get with our people to sort of say, hey, this is what we need you to do. And things like, you know, like we need, you can't ship a car, like in the state of Alaska for a while, there was a ban on shipments of cargo. And I don't know if you're familiar with the way transportation works in the state of Alaska, but there are very, very few roads. And so a lot of the communities depend on Alaska Airlines to bring them everything from machinery, tools for their equipment, their food, their medicines, their cash, even for the banks. We fly a lot of that stuff into those communities, and we weren't allowed to do any of that for a period of time. So I went to Washington, D.C. to rally for an exemption for the state of Alaska. We had to qualify all of the shippers as known shippers so that we did background checks and made sure they were who they said they were. And then we screened all kinds of packages. And it was a very massive change to the way we handled a lot of the things that we did. And it required a huge amount of coordination and communication. And things were changing rapidly too. So it'd be like, okay, we're going to have a call at 8 a.m. and we're going to have another call at 6:30 at night. And there may have been a bunch of changes in between that we needed to kind of keep people up to speed with. But I think we did fairly well with it. It just was a lot.
I can't imagine. And I'll say, this is not me, you know, just because I'm talking to you, this is an honest comment. I mean, the Alaska experience, I feel is far superior than any other airline I've flown on. So,
well, I appreciate you saying that.
You guys do good work. You mentioned some of the work in Alaska, and I've heard that before. How important? Can you give me a little bit of the history of Alaska Airlines? Like, what was it started in Anchorage, yeah, Fairbanks, or how that worked?
And I think it was Fairbanks. Mac McGee was the founder of the company, and he started by doing important medical drops to small communities in the state of Alaska that otherwise didn't have any access to goods or medication. And so it's grown really from there. The headquarters has been in Seattle for, I don't know, I just celebrated my 35th year with the company, but way before I was here, Alaska Airlines headquarters has been in Seattle. Started doing a lot of service just within the state of Alaska. And then it was sort of two from the state of Alaska to Seattle, down into California. Now, as you know, we serve five countries. We go all the way across the United States and back into Hawaii. We're super excited about our goal to acquire Hawaiian. And so I'm working very diligently on the acquisition of Hawaiian so that if and when the Department of Justice approves our merger, that we're ready to go. So really exciting for us. You know, Hawaiian Airlines serves a large number of countries. They, you know, they're in Europe, they're in Australia, New Zealand, Cook Islands, all kinds of places that we're really excited to serve. So it'll be really fun.
So I know you own Horizon, that since I could ever remember, and then there was a Virgin merger at one point too, right?
Yes, there was. Yeah. So I should know the time frame now, but it all kind of blurs together. But 6-7 years ago, we acquired Virgin and went through that merger and acquisition. I will tell you that we learned a tremendous amount, and I know that we will be much better served going into this merger. We have much more eyes wide open to what we're getting setting ourselves up for in terms of the effort and the work required to make sure that you take two airlines and come out of one in a successful way.
Right. Did you ever get to meet Richard Branson in the process?
Yes, I did.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
He came and had lunch with our officers. Did he
have the executives out to his island or something?
Nothing that exciting. He came to our headquarters. I think he was woefully disappointed.
I've stopped by your headquarters before. I had a couple of students work in the accounting department there, but I actually
have awesome.
From high school. You may know him, Cole Cosgrove. He does.
Oh yes. I know Cole well.
Yeah. So he's, I mean, since high school, I've known him. So it's great. It's great to
also. He is great.
So yeah.
He's also a ski patrol person up at White Pass. So I see him up there.
Of course he is.
Yeah. Good man.
Oh, that's awesome. Are you a skier?
I am. Not particularly great skier, but I like skiing a lot.
Yeah. It's a good way to kind of get through the winter, I feel like.
Exactly. It's been a really fun family thing too.
Yes.
All the kids and the grandkids are out there. We make it all happen. It's fun.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. It's I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I feel like this last year, the 5-year-old has kind of gotten to a point where, you know, I'm not having, I mean, he's skiing blues and he's still in a pizza, but I feel like a good 2 years where, you know, rolling around in the snow, I'm picking him up, I'm skiing him down. It was exhausting. It was like, we're at a good place. We're starting to get to a good place.
Yeah, by next year, he'll be passing you probably, right? He'll be moving you in the dust.
I'm totally fine with that because I'm exhausted after 3 hours and I just want to keep going and going. And I'm like, oh, I need a beer and a nap, and then maybe I'll be ready.
Sounds perfect to me.
That's my kind of skiing. So yeah, well, that's great. That's great. But talking about 9/11, were you in the office when everything went down? It was early in the morning for us on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I was actually in Eddie Beer's intermediate accounting class.
Oh dear Lord,
I want to say maybe we woke up to the news of the first plane, and then maybe by the time I got to class, the second plane, or maybe we watched TV in the class for a little bit. Of course, it's Eddie. After 10 minutes, he turned it off and went back to.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, no, I was actually at home. My mother-in-law was visiting for some reason, but I was at home and I saw that. My husband called and said, hey, something bad's happened. Turn the TV on. And I saw the second plane. And then I immediately went in and we were there for several days straight, just sort of sorting through what was happening and trying to make sense of all of it. And it just was really, really a shocking thing, right? Yeah. You know, I think I mentioned before, like, I think it's so important that people find companies that where the values align with where you're at. And we are a very values-based company. We're very, you know, we let our values guide a lot of the things we do. And I think that was really helpful even when this happened. You know, own safety is one of our values. It's like, hey, we're going to do whatever we need to do to make sure we're keeping our people safe. You know, we want to get them home and let's do the right thing by getting them back to where they need to be. And that guides how we do everything that we do.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Awesome. I mean, you can certainly sense it when I hear from Cole and others. It's that's 100% accurate. Now, random question for you. You fly the Copper River salmon down, the first catch of the
heck
year.
Yeah.
Do you guys get like first dibs on a couple fillets or anything that come off? That
No, you know, I could always go when that first salmon comes off, but it usually arrives very early in the morning, and I'm an early riser, but 4:30 or 5 is a little too early for even my blood, but it's pretty cool.
So yeah. They literally, I mean, they're catching it probably that night before, skinning it, whatever.
Throwing it on a plane and taking it down.
Wow. And then that's
getting it into stores quick, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be fresh. I mean, it's probably in stores in under 12 hours from the time it was swimming last. So,
oh yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. A cool tradition. And I remember for the short period of time I lived in Seattle, it was always on the news when that came in, the Alaska flight with the. I'm imagining it's a cargo plane. You're not stacking salmon on the seats, but
we don't stack them on the seats, but we do carry a lot of fish in the bellies of our airplanes underneath where the seats are. We carry a lot of fish, a lot of different places.
I bet. Yeah, and people going up there for fishing trips and coming back. And
yeah. Have you done that yourself?
I haven't. There's a group of colleagues here that did it for a number of years. My kids were too young, and then now they've stopped, and my kids are about the right age. But
yeah,
eventually,
it's just beautiful. It's a fun thing to do if you get a chance to go up there. I mean, the country in Alaska is so spectacular, and the fishing's really fun. I haven't been for a little while myself, but it's a joy.
Yeah, really great. Awesome. I've been in. I mean, it's so big. It's like overwhelming how big Alaska is. And you talk about, we get a fair number of students from Alaska, and you know they'll be talking about their lake cabin, which they have to fly to. I think everyone has a pilot's license.
A float plane, yeah, exactly.
Around. So, yeah, but we got to fly there. It's, you know, we're one cabin on a lake. You know, it's, I don't know, 300 miles north of here or something crazy like that. So,
beware of bears.
Yeah, and that whole thing too. So yeah,
exactly.
Oh, crazy. So okay, so you're, and I know I've been jumping around a bit, but so you did the flight attendant lead, and then eventually you move over to HR. So you're overseeing everybody, and you've been in that role for some time, right?
Mm-hmm. About 6.5 years.
Okay, and now and that's, I guess that's through the Virgin merger. What in that? Tell me your favorite part and some of the more challenging parts of the job.
Okay, that's a good question. So it's interesting, you know, I think that it's easy to, you know, everybody has an opinion about HR, and like, I sort of was naive. I didn't really realize that people really don't like HR very much. You know, they're not very popular. But the other thing I didn't really have full appreciation for is how varied the work is in HR. Everything from health insurance, pensions, 401k, all the benefits issues, to all the hiring, to dealing with, you know, one individual's promotion, org reviews, you know, there's a lot to HR. Learning and org development, you know, making sure that you're doing right by your people in terms of making this be an attractive place and having a really solid employee value proposition. So I came after, when we were almost done with all the people transitions from the Virgin acquisition, which was really good. We spent a lot of time then really putting in some basic blocking and tackling that didn't really exist on the team. We did a lot around succession planning. We did a lot around compensation, making sure that we re-leveled all the jobs in the company so that we had a career framework that made sense and that we had compensation that was aligned with that. We've spent some time really being clear around our employee value proposition, the whole notion of why it is that someone would want to come work for Alaska, which proved to be super important when we came out of COVID and all of a sudden we needed to do massive hiring and we are trying to differentiate ourselves from everybody else in the marketplace. So there's been some fun work around that. The other thing that we've really been focused a lot on is sort of our hiring process, talent acquisition. You know, it used to be that we would post a job application. We might even run an ad in the paper for a flight attendant position. 3,000 people would show up at a hotel and we'd, you know, we would just run through all. It was like a whole big day-long process and we'd get through it. And, you know, coming out of COVID, first of all, nobody was going to come pack into a ballroom like that. And people were not necessarily super hot on flying because they were still a little skittish after everything that had happened. There's just a lot we've done. So we revolutionized the way we do hiring. People want to, they want to apply on their phone. They want to be able to upload their resume and they're not going to just apply to you. They're going to apply to a whole bunch of places. And so, you know, your no-show rate's higher. A lot of things were super different. So we've done a lot of focusing on that process, making it fast, efficient. It made a good experience for the candidate and a fast, efficient experience for the hiring managers. And we recognize too that if we don't meet the numbers that they need, then the airline can't grow because you've got to have enough people to make it happen. And the world was very different from an employment perspective following COVID. So we had to do a lot of pivoting. So that has been really interesting. I love challenges. Like I think it's fun to try to set yourself up to measure things differently, to be there for people. The other part that's been really fun for me is sort of this whole notion of succession planning and people development. So you've heard a lot, I'm sure, about the airline pilot shortage. So we've put so many programs in place to really do outreach to even starting in high schools. We've got scholarship programs for people wherever they might be on their pilot journey. We set up a pilot academy so they basically someone can start from the very beginning and end with a pilot license with a path right to Horizon, which then has a path that goes right to Alaska if that's something you want to do. We've done similar programs for maintenance and engineering. We've got programs between Alaska Horizon for flight attendants and dispatch and all kinds of different roles to kind of help people. We put in some educational assistance programs to really help people be able to sort of navigate a career within the airline a little bit like I have, where you get to do lots of different things and find this be a place where you can have a whole lot, you know, a lifetime of career opportunities all within the same company, if that's something that you really want to do. So that's been, that part's been super fun.
That's like your journey, right? From through accounting and
into- yeah, it's kind of, it's cool, right? And if I can help other people have some, it, you know, we, and they can enjoy this place half as much as I have, I think that's a real win. It's good.
And when you mentioned Horizon again, I want to make sure that I don't forget to say this or ask about this. There are some school themed planes at Horizon. What do we have to do to get a Gonzaga plane?
Hey, I've been pushing. I've been pushing for it. I don't know. I think you need to get some, you need to get somebody with some clout to send a letter, say, hey, I think it would be good for these reasons.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll ever happen, but.
Yeah. Are they still doing the school themed planes or
the... they've done some recently. I think they've slowed some of the Q400, most of them were Q400s, and we've retired the Q400 fleet from Horizon. So now they're the jets. It's going to take a little while for all that to happen, but I think that's super fun. It's just sort of part of our personality, right?
Absolutely.
To highlight local favorites and make them feel good.
Yeah, as long as you're not flying on your rival's plane, I think you're happy with it. Right?
So, you have to plug your nose and get on if you got a rival plane.
So we talked a little about 9/11, and then you touched on COVID, but can you expand on kind of that? Hey, things are great. The COVID shock, like how was that managed? I mean, particularly for airlines, right? Because you guys got shut down. I mean, everything got shut down, I guess, but
right.
I mean,
no, people were terrified to fly. Right. So, yeah. I mean, there were some days in there where we were paying out more refunds than we were getting bookings, and there was no visibility as to where the bottom was. Right. There was really no understanding of how bad it would get or how long it would last. So we did a lot of things right away. We set up some early out programs for employees who are sort of saying, hey, maybe this isn't for me. I've been thinking about it anyway. It's time for me to go. We did some things to try to make it as painless as possible to get people off of the payroll that wanted to get off. And then the government came along and said, hey, we'll give you some funding to help keep you afloat, and also some funding to allow you to pay people who wanted to take some leaves. And so that was really helpful. I mean, we sort of became an avenue for the government to help support, you know, fund unemployment really for some people that wanted leaves. And that was super helpful for all of us. And it gave control to our employees to be able to say, hey, I'm not comfortable coming back yet. I want to be home until I understand a little bit more about what this looks like. And without us needing to lay people off or do something more draconian, I think that was super helpful. So we went through a whole lot of redeploying people. Like let's say I had a whole recruiting team. All they did was hire people. Well, needless to say, our role shifted into trying to get people off of the payroll. And so we redeployed those people into a lot of other areas to help do work. And so that was a really, really massive effort. And it was a time when we sort of took a bottoms up approach and we renegotiated a lot of contracts. We looked for all kinds of ways to make sure that we were as efficient, as effective with our money as possible. Airlines are thin, low margin businesses. And so we're not a stranger to sort of saying, what do we need to do to make sure that we're really, really managing costs well? And what do we want to be like after we sort of went through the initial crisis, like, what do we need to be? How do we need to position ourselves for when this thing comes to an end? And we started to sort of see the numbers dip and, you know, the vaccine take effect. And we were sort of setting ourselves up to be poised for growth or whatever it meant when we wanted to get back, ramp back up. And so we spent a lot of time on that.
And are you guys having regular conversations with CDC or... I forget Fauci's organization, but I would, because really when I think of super spreader, right? You're confined in an enclosed area for a number of hours on a flight, right? So I would imagine, you know,
yeah, we did a lot around that too. Of course, it was a lot around concern and confidence. So there was the mask mandate, which our poor flight attendants had to do a lot of enforcing of, and that was really, really tough. Because I think somehow when people put a mask on, they're not, you know, they feel like they're invisible or something. And some of the humanity, I think, sort of escaped a little bit. We also implemented a big program around aircraft cleanliness. And we did a ton of work around how do we make sure our planes are safe for people and that they know that they're clean and that they can feel good that we've done all that we can to make sure that they are as clean as possible. We changed a lot of our food and beverage, so things were individually packaged so that, you know, you could have it. And we didn't allow people to have their masks off much, but if you were taking a sip of your beer or your wine or your pop or your coffee, you could take a sip and put your mask back on. But it was much more individually packaged so that we were doing what we could to make sure people felt safe.
Right.
Yeah, so there was just a lot around that notion of making sure that we're thoughtful about the concerns that all of us had, frankly.
Right. Gosh, it was so crazy. I remember seeing there were flights with like two people on them early on, right?
People were afraid to fly, for sure. And then it slowly started building back up. It's a little bit like, you know, our offices too were shut down. I mean, like all of us, we all had to figure out how to work differently in a world where, you know, people aren't face to face. We all know, I'm on a Zoom call with you. I mean, Teams and Zoom and all of those tools that didn't really exist have now become a way of life, which I think is a little bit of the silver lining of COVID.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting. Our students that are coming out, there are some different expectations about being in the office. Can I be remote? And the implications of that on both sides. I mean, and of course, my view is pretty focused on accounting, but you know, one of the big challenges is for the firms the amount of learning that happens in person that's not getting captured on a Zoom. You know, just being osmosis, right, whatever you want to call it, being in the room, hearing things, being able to just poke your head in someone's office and ask a question, or the water cooler talk, if we call it that. But
yeah, I think that's a big area, you know, and that's one of the things we struggled with too. Like everyone has coming out of COVID is like, what's the appropriate amount of work from home versus work in office? You know, our business survives because we have employees that come to work every day and they work face to face with guests. And so we believe it's an important part of our culture that our back office spends time together. And I do think collaboration is better when you work together. But you can't ignore the fact that there's a lot of good things that happened remotely too. And I think most employees want some flexibility. They want to be able to have more control over their life and have things work for them. So we're trying to find the right balance.
Yeah, and I always wonder, I mean, I hear different tales, but did productivity decrease or increase with remote, you know? And now I feel like from a personal perspective, it's probably increased because there's always access to me, right? I mean, even if I, you know, my kid wakes up with a bad dream at 2 a.m., I'm probably going to be up for an hour and I'm going to check my email and I'll respond to a couple of things. So it's interesting.
It is interesting. There's lots of studies to support whatever side of the equation you fall on with respect to that. And it's hard. It's hard. But I think we need to be willing to learn from the lessons of that and find ways that make it work for everybody.
Yeah.
But there's some good debates in the boardroom over what is the right answer.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall for some of those. You've had a tremendous journey, and you've navigated a lot of things, you know, 9/11, COVID, new roles, you know, labor agreements, what have you. What do you think is a skill set or two that was most important to your success over your time and you can go back to Anderson if you want, but at Alaska?
I think foundational to everything is communication. And I think good communication starts with really trying to listen and understand somebody else's perspective. I think sort of hand in hand with that is your ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Because I think without being able to do that, it sometimes you miss the message. And especially if labor negotiations, really being able to sort of see it from somebody else's perspective is critical. And I will be honest, sometimes I'm better at that than others. You get super busy and I don't think I listen as well now as I did before. It's really important. I think too, you need to have a sense that you can make a difference and that it's your job to make a difference with things. I have really found in all my years at Alaska that there's a problem that needs to be addressed or an opportunity that needs to be seized. If you're passionate enough about it and you're logical about it, you can and should do what you need to do to get things addressed. And sometimes you don't know the answer. And this is a simple example, but we used to have these paper comment cards that go in the seat back pocket, and people would say, Seattle Medford flight such and such, flight attendant so-and-so was fantastic. They did X, Y, Z. And we'd get stacks of them. And then you try to sort out who was, and they only have first names. And you have, it's like a massive effort to try to get that, this really important feedback, positive reinforcement out to people. And so that was a big thing at Horizon. And we were very focused about making sure we got that stuff back, but it's not scalable at Alaska. So I told my boss at the time, I said, I want an electronic comment card. I want some way for people to give us feedback electronically that we can more easily get back to people. And so we did. We created what's called Alaska Listens. You may see the surveys after your flights. And we said, we only want 5 questions. People can expand if they want, but super simple for people to fill out and the ability to get good feedback back to people timely. And I think it's been successful. But that's just a little example of me saying, yeah, I really think this is important. Positive feedback to people. Like you mentioned, I think you have good experiences with Alaska. We have great people and we have great customers who tell us good things about our people. But if we don't get it back to them, we're missing a huge opportunity to recognize and reward what matters. And so that's just an example. I think as a trait, it's like, hey, see an opportunity, recognize that it's your obligation to go out there and make a change. And while I had no idea how to do an online survey or what that meant or how to get there, there's a lot of people out there that can help you. And we pulled a group of people and made it happen. So that's a really important thing. Like you gotta wade into the uncomfortable. You gotta have a desire to really change things and you can make really, really important things happen. And I think another thing I'd say is just you have to take care of the people that are in your circle or the people that, that are important to making sure that you can get things done.
Surround yourself with good people. Sounds like an element of greatness is in the agency of others and getting the right team together.
Absolutely.
And leveraging different skill sets.
Right.
Here's my pro tip. And you probably already know this, but in case anyone's out there listening, on the Horizon flights, you want to sit in the back row because typically the flight attendant, if they have like some leftover beer and they'll just give it to you in the back row, and they'll serve you first before they go all the way to the front of the plane and move it back. Now maybe that was on the Q400s. I don't know I haven't been on the jet in a while. Although tomorrow I'm coming back from LA on an Alaska flight, but I'm gonna guess it's a 737.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But you can consume a lot of alcohol in those Horizon flights if you strategically place yourself in the right seat on the plane, right?
yeah, that's good.
I really appreciate that you know that.
Yeah, right. Well, in all seriousness, I mean, I've been on flights where I've seen your people help us. A mom who had two twins with her, and they were crying babies, and sitting down with them or letting the mom use the restroom or something like that. It was always pretty impressive.
We just have such amazing people. We really try to hire people who are really sort of other focused, not focused all on just what their things are. And I do think it pays off. They're just so good.
Yeah, that's awesome. And one last question for you, and you've kind of already answered this, but in case you want to expand on a different angle, for our graduates, spring, or this is spring right now, coming up on May, Mother's Day, there'll be another freshly minted class of Zags going out and pursuing their dreams. Any tips for them as they embark on that journey?
Oh my gosh, my daughter graduated last Mother's Day from Gonzaga, and she probably feels like I've tried to give her too much advice. I just I just think that the world is your oyster. Like, you don't need to rush to do anything. I was a little bit paranoid. Like, I knew I didn't have a job, so I sort of jumped right into career. I don't rush, but be deliberate about what it is that you want to do, and recognize the value you have in every choice you make, and recognize you always have a choice. When you feel stuck, make a different choice. And, you know, seek out advice from people. People love to give advice. You don't have to listen to it. You don't have to do it, but it is good to hear different perspectives on things. And I'd say call your mother, because it is Mother's Day. And us moms, we really appreciate it. We matter a lot.
You certainly do. You certainly do. It's incredible what moms do. I mean, it's beyond me, actually. So, and now as a father, seeing what my wife has done with our kids, because I'm just like, they're great kids. I'm like, I didn't do anything. She's the one that makes all the magic happen. So
kids are just great on their own, but it's fun. I love being, it's one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given is to be a mom. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time.
It was my pleasure. And you remember that your grandfather taught me CPA. He led my CPA review class.
Oh,
got me
man.
That thing.
For better or worse on that, I'm sure. It always depends on the era, whether he was kind of cranky or, you know, in his prime, or because he was around for a long, I mean, over 40, 45 years or something like that. So
that's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. What a gift, really.
Yeah. It's
got a lot of people through that thing.
That's for sure. I think he was the one that kind of set the standards of excellence that I've been fortunate enough to inherit in my current role. And I mean,
an incredible legacy, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the cool things about my role is maybe once a month, maybe once a quarter now, I'll get a random email or call from somebody who saw my name on the website. And it's not like a Smith or a Jones, and they're like, oh, this must be related. I'll get a fun story out of it.
I love that. I love that. Well, Andrew, awesome. Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. And I hope your trip is great on Alaska and Horizon today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, thanks. We'll see you soon. Let me know next time you're on campus and we'll connect in person.
I sure will.
All right. Cheers.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the G Suite podcast. This episode was produced and hosted by Andrew Brasich and edited by Jack Talbot. To find more G Suite and many other podcasts on the Gonzaga Podcast Network, remember to check out gonzaga.edu/podcasts. Thanks again.